That's EEECS. It stands for Electronics, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science. My name is TJ Cosgrove. I'm the Technology and Innovation Officer for the School of Electronics, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science at Queen's University Belfast. Our passionate staff and incredible students are at the forefront of 21st century technology, working in areas like artificial intelligence, data analytics, virtual reality, robotics, cybersecurity, smart grids, and cloud edge computing. But what do these technologies actually do? How do they work? And what do they mean for our future? We break down the complex topics and explain the big ideas with our experts, researchers, staff, and students. This is the EEECS podcast. So today I'm talking to Dr. Matthew Collins. Hi, Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, TJ. Thank you very much.
And I'm talking to you today about VR, virtual reality. So do you want to tell me a little bit about who you are and why I would be talking to you about VR?
Yeah, no problem. I'm a lecturer education in computer science for EEECS in Queen's. And that's, you know, that's the day job, mostly teaching. But as a side part of that job, I'm also the academic lead of the VR lab that we have in computer science, in the computer science building. And that means that, one, I'm in charge of spending the budget to get the equipment, but also then guiding the students who want to use the equipment that we have, and supervising a lot of final year projects and extracurricular projects into the use of virtual reality equipment and seeing what we can do with that. I have some experience in virtual reality, so that's why I'm arguably worth talking to.
Yeah, I think so. So before we launch into the back end of this, what is VR? What is virtual reality for those of us who may not know that?
Fair enough. I mean, it's a term that has come to be used to mean a certain thing. I mean, initially it's more just, you know, any sort of simulated reality. But in recent times, it's commonly thought of as those virtual headsets that you put on your head and you are transported into an alternative world, a digital world, and where initial computer games or programs are like on a 2D screen in front of you, what they call pancake games, virtual reality puts you in that world and you are the center of a three-dimensional world. You've got that headset on, you can look around you, and the digital world is all around you. And then there are different versions of that with different bits of hardware, and more recently, controllers that are also tracked as you move your head and your hands, you move within that world, and can interact with things in a very different way to computer programs before, pancake games and other programs. It's a funny term, but it's become accepted. It's that idea of moving from the 2D into the 3D, and just it opens up a whole different way of interacting with things.
This is a relatively recent thing then, the last couple of years. It's not
from a consumer level, it is. It's been looked at and researched, but the technology has caught up now that that it's kind of affordable and practical to get it out on a larger scale into people. Like in the 60s, people were looking at it from a research project point of view. There was a program called the Sword of Damocles, which was basically two giant TV screens hanging from a crane, some head tracking technology to move it around as you adjusted your gaze, that it would adjust with you, and you could get sort of simulated three-dimensional raster vision. But I mean, it was the 60s. Our tennis games of that time was Pong, you know, so you can imagine what our VR games were. it was similar, but as time has gone on, we got closer, and we're in sort of fairly realistic and fairly immersive simulations that you're not far off your Star Trek holodeck, you know.
And I think that's where it has come from for a lot of people anyway. Their first understanding of what VR is comes from science fiction, from TV, from books, if you know, shows like Star Trek.
I think that idea that it's not uncommon. So say, you know, truth is stranger than fiction or whatever. This idea of seeing things that people imagined that ultimately become real. I mean, Star Trek's done it a few times with communicators becoming mobile phones and everything else mm-hmm. like that. But that idea of, yeah, being able to go into the computer, being able to be digitized, being able to have the imaginary become reality in a convincing way in front of you, and then being able to play out those imaginary scenarios. And it's yeah, that idea of just being able to visualize things in such a way that they're so convincing, that's what has driven the push for this type of technology.
But it's not the first time that people have tried to sort of commercialize the idea of that digital world interaction. I know Nintendo tried a few different times to give people different ways of interacting.
Nintendo did it a few times. Yeah. It never really worked and have usually been shot down. The Power Glove was mm-hmm. it was a way of interacting with just with your pancake games on your screen, but with a hand-controlled device. You wore a big, clunky super glove, and through moving your fingers and things, you could, in theory, interact with the game. I think there are quotes saying it was the worst experience ever, though. So wasn't particularly successful. And then they also did a thing called the Virtual Boy in the early 90s, mid 90s. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the technology they were using didn't, like, I mean, we compare 90s technology to now, but even compare that to the Virtual Boy was a headset that sort of gave you a red, fuzzy 3D version of 2D games. It wasn't virtual reality like we visualize when we talk about mm-hmm. the term, but it was a headset that you put on and you played your games, and it in theory added an extra layer of depth to it. But no, again, it was clunky, and it wasn't really what people expected from mm-hmm. from what they were seeing in science fiction to what they were actually being presented with. But now we're an awful lot closer now. But even that, it's only the last 4 or 5 years, really. 6 or 7 were the early sort of experimental things. Oculus were a company when they launched the CV1. I think it stands for Consumer Version 1. But it was an early dev kit of a headset. And you could play your 3D games with a tracked headset mm-hmm. you could move around and see the world. Now, you still controlled it with keyboard and mouse or with game controllers. It didn't get into the whole tracking, fully tracked controllers until the last 4 or 5 years. And then there's been a bit of an arms race then between 2 or 3 companies. So you had the consumer version 1 was the headset that Oculus sort of brought out early. And that was just the headset alone, but it was sort of setting the standard for the modern iteration, and it was convincing rendering and good quality tracking within that headset. But then in the last few years, yeah, there's been an arms race in hand tracking is basically where we've got, because HTC made the Vive, and they had motion tracked controllers. And what was the Vive wand, I think, was the term most used, but it was like it was a tool that you'd hold in your hand. It was a sort of a wand, but it was fully tracked. And you had two sensors in the corner of your room, lighthouses, but that gave you full 360 tracking. And you had your headset that was tracked and your wands, which were tracked, and you could do a full 360 game. And you could properly walk around and interact with things using your hands and so on. Around the same time, Oculus upgraded. So their headset was still basically the same headset, but they brought out the touch controllers, which were a similar motion tracked controller. Now they were using front-facing sensors rather than lighthouses in the corner of the room, but basically the same technology, infrared beams coming out from sensors and then being relayed back into the computer through the headset, basically. But that's how the telemetry of these devices were tracked and kept in track of. And then there's been various iterative upgrades of these. The Vive brought out like higher resolution versions of its headset, like the Vive Pro, and more recently Valve, who were in partnership with Vive. Slightly confusing, similar names, but Valve, who makes Steam, they developed the Lighthouse technology, but HTC made the headsets and controllers. But Steam, Valve have now branched out on their own, and they're making their own headset and controllers, the Valve Index and the Index controllers. That's the most recent PC VR iteration. So it's still using the lighthouses in the corner, but it's a very high resolution headset. It's a very innovative controller in comparison to some of those other controllers. It's brought very interesting degree of finger tracking to it. So you're holding the controller, but the controller is basically strapped to your hand, and there are capacitive surfaces on the controller that when you move your individual fingers, it can sense the position of those fingers. So then they're able to simulate closer to actual hand tracking in the virtual world. Separately, like Facebook, who now own Oculus, have brought out a completely standalone headset that doesn't connect to the PC at all, called the Oculus Quest. And they also have a PC VR headset that has abandoned lighthouses altogether. Both those headsets are using what's called inside-out tracking rather than outside-in. Outside-in was your external sensors, your lighthouses or whatever that bathed the room in infrared. Inside-out puts cameras on the headset itself and looks out at the world. And analyzes the world around and does the tracking that way. And so Oculus have gone that way. HTC have also brought out the Cosmos, which uses a similar type of tracking, inside-out tracking. There's Windows Mixed Reality headsets, and some of those use inside-out tracking. There's a whole mix, and there's a whole lot of competing versions of how this works. So Valve have stuck with the lighthouses, but they... and you can arguably get higher quality tracking, but there's a more complicated setup and a more cumbersome setup. So it's a trade-off. And can you get good quality, acceptable quality tracking from the inside-out tracking only, where you can only be tracked effectively within line of sight of the cameras on the headset? So if you move your hand behind yourself, do you lose track of the hand that's holding the virtual sword? You know, it's a balancing act. But for the most part, the inside out tracking seems to work very well. I'm very impressed with the Quest, and it in particular has impressed me because it is this small, completely standalone headset that doesn't require a large PC with a high-end graphics card to drive it. And the fact that in this short space of time, effectively since 2013, really, we've already gone two or three generations of consumer VR, and we're at this form factor that is quite practical and relatively affordable, and it's very impressive.
So it's all basically games, is what you're saying at the minute?
Games are driving it.
Yeah.
I think entertainment drives technology. And we'll not go into depth on why VHS won over Betamax or why Blu-ray won over HD DVD, but entertainment drives technology, and these games are a large market. PlayStation VR is also doing a lot to get consumer level VR out there to a wider market. There's a lot more you can do with VR, you know, the mm-hmm. potential for realistic simulations, for teleconferencing and communication, for medical training, for all sorts of things you could do that this technology allows once you're in a convincing virtual simulation and with proper tracking of your motion and so on. What you can do with it is very, very promising. But to drive the innovation within that, there's a commercial wing to that. So pushing it out to a market, the way that that seems to be easier to drive is with games and with entertainment. You can sit and watch a Netflix show, but watch it as if you're sitting in a giant virtual cinema. I did it the other day in a communication version of that, where I sat in a virtual cinema with a friend who also had a VR headset, but he's miles away from me right now. But the two of us sat and watched the film and talked over it and ruined it for each other. You know, that's possible with this sort of tech. Games are driving it. Games and other forms of entertainment are driving it. But there are proper practical applications for it too. There is a version of the HTC Vive Pro with eye tracking, and there are no games really using the eye tracking features. So the consumer headsets don't tend to include the eye tracking. It's still too expensive to push it out there. But you can imagine someone putting a virtual simulation out there and then trying to get people using it. But then the consumer metrics that you can gather from understanding how they interact with that mm-hmm. thing,
where they're looking,
where their attention is drawn, and so on, which in turn could drive the technology itself, because the potential to do concentrated rendering of the graphics, but only do the high quality rendering in where people are actually looking. Mm-hmm. You know, the foveated rendering or whatever is one of the terms that tends to be used. You know, it's a feedback loop, and all these things sort of drive each other, and they drive innovation as people take them on. But yeah, I think the social aspects of VR, the teleconferencing thing, are that's sort of taking off at the moment. Things like in the gaming sphere, it's things like Rec Room and VR Chat are very popular programs that are not really games at all. You just create a virtual avatar and get dropped into social spaces to talk to each other. But it's the forums of the past, but you're now communicating with a virtual avatar rather than just typing into a forum box. It's those sorts of ideas.
And so how are you and your students using it? Obviously, there's a little bit of games. You know, the games will play a part in the VR lab, but what projects and initiatives are your students and you using with VR? What are you doing?
There isn't the scope to do it on a large scale for a complete module of students to do a complete module, like 150 students doing a module in virtual reality. That's difficult at the moment. The technology and the scale of technology isn't there. But on an individual level, you know, a few students, driven, interested students, can come in and use the facilities as part of their final year project or their MSc project or whatever, and build something interesting. And I tend to push them down a track of doing something a bit more experimental. So the Index controllers that I was talking about, they're brand new. They do hand tracking and finger tracking, but there is very little software out there that's actually using them, you know, because all the software was built for the earlier controllers. So then it's like, okay, well, let's explore trying to do something with these new controllers and the extra features that they enable. So can we interact with the world in a different way than how we did before? So I've had a student recently just experimenting with those controllers. Now, when he did a musical simulation thing, actually, where you could basically move your hands on the controllers, and he turned it into an instrument where different fingers corresponded to different notes, and then different positions where you move the controller up or down in the virtual world changed the pitch of those notes. And it was really interesting. And it doesn't have to be virtual reality. It was more about the hand tracking aspect of it. It wasn't really about the virtual world at all, but it was very interesting. Similarly, those Inside Out headsets, because they are scanning the world through cameras on the headsets, they've started integrating actual hand tracking into the headset so that you can put the controller down and your hand is tracked, and through various gestures you can interact with menus again. And again, the capability to do that is there, but the software actually utilizing it is few and far between at the moment because it is so new. So again, I'd have students sort of looking at those aspects and saying, okay, well, what sort of applications can I build that allow me to use this new way of interacting with a virtual world, and how can I actually do it? I had a student more recently do virtual video editing. He was on our MSc program, which is a conversion master's. They come from another discipline. They do a crash course in learning to be a software developer, and then they have to do a project at the end. This guy, his day job was in video editing. So he had an expertise of the field, but he saw the potential to just do something interesting with the VR, and the idea that you could do this Minority Report idea of, you know, being able to bring up virtual windows and move stuff around and get away from sitting hunched over a desk with a mouse and keyboard, and actually interact with your video clips. And he built a very interesting system, and it was just proof of concept, but he built a way that you could import your video clips, but they were represented physically as large cubes. Cube is the wrong word. Oblongs, three-dimensional rectangles that were proportional to the length of the video. And then you could chop them up and rearrange them and shape your video, do timeline-based editing, but with blocks, and rearrange your clips and visualize what it was you were doing. And it's just a different layer of abstraction. And then press an export button and out comes a video that corresponds to the edit that you've made. Another one was, I've talked about the controllers and things before, but there's other pieces of hardware that people have developed. So you've got that lighthouse system that scans the room. Well, you can build other pieces of hardware that utilize that same tracking system. And Vive built these, what they call the Vive trackers or tracking pucks, that are a simplified version of their controller. It's just a tracked hockey puck sized object, but you can then attach that on a strap to different objects in a room and then import tracking features to any object, to a baseball bat or to individual limbs. Like, so you could wear two trackers on your feet and suddenly you've got the controllers in your hands, you've got trackers on your feet, you've got the headset, you've got a whole body that can be tracked there. And so I had a student use that concept. His mother was a physiotherapist, and he built a system to gamify physiotherapy for children and simplify, what can be a very boring, repetitive exercise, trying to get them to do their exercises. He turned it into a game where you had like a tracked spaceship, could be attached to any of your limbs. And then you're put in a virtual world and you're in space and there's stars, and you can trace out a path with the rocket ship, and then repeatedly follow that path, tracing through this line of asteroids and so on. And it turned the exercise into a game, and the patient is in the virtual world. The physiotherapist is on a computer in the corner driving that experience and being able to interact with it from the outside looking in. Again, it's a very, very interesting way of going through it. And everything I've described so far is what's commonly called virtual reality. There is another term, so that's VR. There's another term, AR, augmented reality, but they're very closely linked. And augmented reality is more typically the idea of you've got the view of the actual world and then digital objects superimposed on top of it. So it's very closely linked to this idea of the inside-out tracking on the headset. If the headset has cameras on it and it's looking at the world, well, then that feed could come back into you and you can see the world through the headset, but then the virtual world can be superimposed on top. So things like Pokemon Go and things have done it on phones. But if you can do it in a headset with full 3D tracking of your controllers, and the potential for that is very, very interesting. So again, I've had a few students doing projects in that area as well. So far, they're still using other equipment, not just the headset itself, but using like a third-party camera specifically for mixed reality, but then sending the feed from that camera into the headset, and then the controllers from the headset interacting with the virtual objects, and sort of a symbiosis of all those different technologies together. But again, it's very interesting where you can see these things heading as the technology becomes, as the hardware becomes more effective, and then writing the software to use that hardware in interesting ways. That's kind of what I want my students to do. They're computer science students, they're not electrical engineers. So I'm about getting them to do the software development, to write the software that makes interesting use cases for this technology.
The technology is kind of, if we look at the timeline, started in the 1960s or even before with that idea, reinforced then by pop culture and science fiction, started to emerge commercially a little bit in the late 80s, early 90s, and then really exploded in sort of 2013 forward to now, the actual commercial VR headsets that we
last,
can know.
The last 5 or 6 years, it's snowballing. It's growing faster, and each successive generation and that arms race, now that there's actual competition between these companies, they are driving each other to drive it forward.
And so that's 5 years of, 5 years ago, would you be using an Oculus CV1 now for any of your dev work?
No, I wouldn't go near it at all.
Yeah. So that's not an old headset in terms of...
No, it's not.
It's 7 years old.
You know, it's by no means obsolete, but it's...
The pace has
grown very, very quickly. And now the interest is in those newer generation ones, because the technology is shifting. We're moving away from the sensor tech, and we're moving into the inside out tracking, and we're moving away from controllers that are just a tool to controllers that can simulate hand tracking. So you need the more complex, more modern controller to get the more immersive interactivity. No, well, that's just where my guys are focused. I'm interested in doing innovative things with the technology that is available. So yeah, going back to the older technology, it's not a waste of time. We learn from where we came from, but yeah, it's about pushing it forward. So that's kind of where my focus is at the moment.
So in just 7 short years, we've gone from the Oculus CV1, the first sort of commercial unit, to the Valve Index. Less than 7 years, really. So what do you see 7 years from now?
I think we're getting higher resolution and fancier headsets. If we can get smaller headsets, that are less cumbersome on the head, that it's just an immersive set of goggles, I think that would be amazing. And things do, they get smaller. The tech that's in them to allow for the tracking is getting smaller all the time. I think the display is only one aspect of it, though. It's the interactive elements of it. At the moment, it's all mainly headset and controllers that are tracked. If you want to track feet and things like the physiotherapy guy was doing, it's a more cumbersome setup. But if you can get the convenience factor down, that you can like track individual limbs and things, you know, the immersiveness goes up. Haptic feedback, if you interact with something in the virtual world, can you feel it? Can you get a simulation of it back? I've heard of devices that you can attach to the front of the headset that can simulate smell in the virtual world.
Smell-o-vision?
I think it's quite niche. I don't want to guess at what sort of simulations they're trying to do with it, but the ideas of how these things can develop, and the human brain is amazing in that it fills in a lot of the gaps. You know, if you can put up a reasonably convincing virtual simulation, but you drop someone in it and they become so immersed in it that the brain forgives the bits and pieces that aren't that convincing and fills in the gaps for them, and you become totally immersed in that world. It's not uncommon to see people, when they take the headset off again, just surprised that they've lost where they were in the room. You know, they put the headset on, they became part of that virtual world, they moved around in that virtual world, they forgot where they were in the outside world. And when they take the headset off again, they're surprised at what direction they're facing, you know. And it's, so I can see that level of immersion becoming more convincing, you know, as the technology allows for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can get to the stage, hopefully, where simulations and training could be done on a scalable way. You know, you don't have to fly people to expensive equipment in order to train and use it. That they can use a simulated version of it in a practical way from the comfort of their own home or something like that. You know, like that's very, very possible. Telepresence, you know, the idea of maybe, yeah, if you're in a virtual environment, but controlling a machine hundreds of miles away, if you can get a proper convincing simulation that can then be realized in the real world, there's some very interesting possibilities with that as well.
Amazing. Listen, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. It's a fantastically interesting conversation. And yeah, VR.
That's where we are. VR, VR. The youth of the nation.
You got a couple more? Do you want to just workshop a few more? We'll pick the best one.
Oh, dear.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
You've been listening to the Triple ECS podcast. You can find us on our website, www.qub.ac.uk/schools/EEECS. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at QUBEEECS. Triple ECS. Inventing tomorrow, today.
HTC. I have a delivery. I'm going
to have to That's okay.
Answer the door. Just one wee second. Hello.
Hello. What'd you get? Anything good?
What is it? I haven't opened it, but I think it's a cooling tray for cakes.
So, perfect. Excellent.
So that should be all right. So what was I talking about?